This episode is brought to you by Cuts Clothing. Hey guys, welcome to this week's episode of Mindset. I have a special guest here with me today to help me in that field, Annalisa Mopio-Jane. Annalisa, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So we met on a sports program called the ABC, That Pacific Sports Show, and I was very impressed with the way you were able to articulate your messages, your story, and what you've been able to do in your career. And also, you've also got a great story that I was, you know, able to relate to a little bit. And I know a lot of kids, you know, whether that's in Australia or I know a lot on PNG will be able to relate to. So I thought I'd get you on the podcast to share a bit of that journey.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was great meeting you on that Pacific Sports Show. And yeah, like you said, sort of similar backgrounds, obviously coming from PNG, moving over to Australia, pursuing sport, obviously. I'm not doing rugby league, or I didn't do rugby league.
It was a much tougher sport than rugby league.
Yeah, well, swimming, yeah, maybe tougher in a different sense, more so because you're sort of by yourself as an individual sport without having a whole team behind you, although you have the people that you train with in a squad for swimming. Yeah, a little bit different when it comes down to your actual performance. You're sort of up there on the blocks by yourself.
Before we talk about the swimming, because I want to talk about that, it's something that I think is you've got to be wired differently to do the swimming. So we'll talk a bit about that. But can you tell us a little bit about your upbringing, your story?
Yeah.
You know, what that was like.
So I was born in Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea. And my mum was actually a journalist working on MTV. So she was travelling a lot all around PNG doing different news stories, and I'd be with family, aunties, uncles, either back in my village in Mekeo or Port Moresby, pretty much wherever my mum was. I would sort of either follow or stay with family. And then I moved over to Australia when I was four. So I actually moved over with my dad, but he's not my biological dad. So he met my mum when I was a baby, I think around one or two. And obviously they were dating in PNG, and it was sort of his idea, you know, suggested to my mum, why don't we move to Australia? There'll be better opportunities for me through school and stuff. And so, yeah, then moved to Australia when I was four. First lived in Central Coast, New South Wales, and then moved to Brisbane when I was seven, and that's been pretty much home since. And yeah, been going back to PNG, tried to go sort of every year, but it's been a bit harder now. I've got two boys, and I haven't been back to PNG since 2016. I actually walked Kokoda. That was the last time I went with my partner.
So, that'd been a good experience.
Yeah, it was amazing. That was also challenging.
Yeah, I'm sure it would. Yeah. But do you remember the first time you went back to PNG?
Yeah. Well, I definitely remember going probably when I started sort of swimming and going back to PNG to qualify for international meets. I think I was probably around 9, 10 going back and, yeah, spending a lot of time around the pool. And then obviously going to my auntie's house and catching up with all my cousins and stuff.
What was that like?
It was, yeah, now that you mention it, I'm like, I could see the difference. I could see the two worlds then. Yeah, obviously life in Australia is different to PNG, but I think every time I went back home, it was just fun. Like, it didn't matter what you were doing. You were always surrounded by family or friends and just yeah, playing a lot of cards, I remember.
Love the cards.
A lot of cards.
What's it called? Last card?
Last card. Last card for sure.
There's another one with three cards.
Three cards. Trip.
The name will probably come down
okay.
later.
Because I remember playing a little last card, speed. I think I ended up teaching my cousins that, and then they were beating me, which was very annoying. speed, go fish, like when I was little, but yeah, definitely last card was always.
Did you ever play bomb?
Oh,
I know the Cornwalls boys, they love bomb in camp.
No, I don't think I did.
Yeah, and we played that in our village. So
yeah.
I'm sure it's as popular as the last card.
Yeah. But no, I just remember always, going back home and like I'd always bring lots of, my clothes and like books and stuff, and then just be playing with all my cousins and catching up with all my cousins.
Yeah. And so you used to go back home for, the swimming and stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you always want to do swimming?
I don't think so, no. If anything, I think my mum was like trying to push me into basketball because she loves basketball. So I did both basketball and swimming pretty much up until high school. So I did representative basketball, and I was doing basketball before, like rep basketball before I was doing representative swimming. But I think just growing up in Australia, going through the Learn to Swim program, and then I made it to sort of that last level, and the coach at the pool asked, would you be interested in joining the club? And I was like, oh, maybe. And I was swimming, doing Learn to Swim in a 25-metre pool, and the squad's obviously in a 50-metre pool. And that was extremely daunting and very scary for me. And I think I was, about 8 then. And I'd been doing laps in the 25-metre pool fine, but having to go into the 50-metre pool, like, I was like, no, I can't do that. And I literally cried that entire lap. And the coach was like, no, it's okay, keep going. And I'm like, I can't do it, like just crying the whole way. And then I made it. And he's like, look, you made it. And I was like, oh, okay, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah, I'll do that now. 33-year-old. I cry when I get to the end.
But no, it was just, it wasn't something that I sort of planned to do. I think it was just that natural progression from the Learn to Swim, joining the squad. And then it was actually that same coach again actually suggested to my parents, if she wanted to and if you wanted to support her, she could actually represent Papua New Guinea in swimming, which I think is amazing for him to sort of mention that to my parents when, I'm 8. And he did it in a way which wasn't any pressure or anything like that. It was just more a suggestion, and he just outlined in swimming, obviously in Australia it's very competitive and they only ever take the top two in each event. And, the time difference between someone that wins and someone that comes 8th is like sometimes half a second or less. And particularly in my event, which I did, was 50 freestyle. But he just sort of pointed out, there's not a lot of swimmers in PNG. I can see some talent in your daughter. If that's something that she wants to pursue, she could do it if she wanted to.
Yeah.
And that's sort of, I guess, where that sort of competitive journey started. And then, my parents also saw that as an opportunity for me to be able to travel the world through different competitions, and obviously through the training in itself for swimming taught me a lot of life skills that I've taken throughout my life since finishing swimming as well.
Yeah. And so fast forward a little bit, representing PNG, mm-hmm. and that was at Olympics.
Yes.
And how did that come about? And did you know that you were going to make it? Or?
Well, so actually I think around 2000 Olympics, that's when I sort of got the taste. I was like, because I went and watched some of the Olympics with my mum. We went down to Sydney. I saw some of the swimming, basketball, volleyball, a few different sports, and I was just like, oh, my God, this is amazing. Look at all of these people who are here watching these amazing athletes in all their different sports. Like, and the energy was just insane.
How old were you then?
Oh, 2000. So 14? 86.
Yeah, so
14.
Pretty young and you're experiencing that environment. It'd be a big eye-opener.
Massive eye-opener. And I was, and also seeing like people from all over the world coming to one place to compete. I think, just seeing that, I was like, wow. And I had started, training a little bit harder in swimming, but I think that just pushed me even more that is something that I could do. So I actually aimed to make the 2004 Athens Olympics. And for me, I had to make the Olympic B qualifying time, and I didn't make it. So I didn't get to go to the 2004 Olympics, and I was really upset. And I was like, no, I can do it. So then obviously trained for another 4 years, and then made it the Olympic B qualifying time. I think it was at Oceania Championships just before 2008 Beijing Olympics, and then I was able to go and I was one of 7 athletes there from PNG.
Yeah. Wow, so that would have been a great experience. But between 2000 and, well, let's say 2004 and 2008, obviously a bit of disappointment.
Yes.
Not being able to go to Athens. Was there any tools that you learned or any way that you dealt with, you know, the emotional battles that you would have had during that period that you can recall at all?
So I definitely remember being quite upset, angry at myself for not making the time. And then sort of once I cried and was like real angry, then I think I sort of directed that energy to training more, training harder to then make that goal.
Because I know a lot of guys, you know, especially in the NRL, guys who are coming through the system wanting to debut at 19, 20 because everyone else seems to be doing that.
Yeah.
They get to like 22, 23s. Probably still haven't had that chance and they're just on the verge of giving up, but they don't realise how close they are.
Yeah.
And I know that's a thing that happens with a lot of young athletes. I like digging up tools that can help young athletes because I think this is an area where they can get a lot of help from former athletes and how they were able to deal with that. And so one way I think about it is you still got a lot of time left. And I mean, I don't know the peak of swimming ages. I know in terms of rugby league, you can this guy's debuting at 26, 27.
Yeah.
There's a 30-year-old plus that debuted.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I think being patient and training hard is has got a lot to do with that as well.
Definitely.
And in terms of that journey from 2004 to 2008, how hard did you train and how often?
I trained very hard. So it sort of blows my mind because I was thinking about it as I was driving here, like how much I used to train. So leading into So even between 2004 and 2008, I sort of made a plan for each year because there was at least one major competition that I could compete in for each year, and that was the training cycle that I would lead into and then compete. So there was one in 2005 and 6, 7 and 8, but I was training 9 to 10 times in the water a week. So they would be anywhere to 1.5, 2 hours each session.
So what would that, if you woke up Monday morning, what does that look like?
Monday morning, so I think training started at 5 a.m. till 7 a.m. Yeah, so I was getting up at like 4:30, usually either having a banana or an up and go, getting in the water, doing either, anywhere between 1.5 to 2 hours in the water. And that would be, generally about 5K. And then at the time I was at uni, so then I'd get ready to go to uni or I'd have a nap if I didn't have any classes or I'd be going to work as well casually.
And what time was that?
So my classes would be, you know, anywhere between 10 and 2, usually an hour or something. And then I'd be working like 9 till 2 and then I'd get back to the pool about 4 and then to stretch, trigger, roll, and then I'd be swimming in the water 5 till 7 p.m.
Yep.
Then I'd go home, have dinner, go to sleep. I'd try to get to bed by like 8, 8.30 because then the next morning would be gym. So I think that was like 5 till 6 and then get in the water like 6 till 7.30 and then either work or uni and then train again in the afternoon. And then do that. And I had a Pilates on Wednesday as well. And then leading into the Olympics, I chucked in a run as well because I wanted to be really fit and strong and ready.
Yeah. I wanted to get your scheduling because you know, a lot of people see the whole thing on TV and probably don't appreciate the amount of work that goes behind the scenes. And I mean, that's only what, 4 days that you've just described?
Yeah.
That's over a period of a year and then essentially 4 years.
Yes.
From
a
major event to the next major event.
Yeah.
And so getting people to see that that's the path that you have to take.
Yes.
And which obviously requires a lot of dedication, commitment, sacrifice, focus.
Yeah.
All these things I don't think is appreciated enough on so many levels. And I think it's I think it's a good example for young kids to see that so they can at least mentally get prepared for it.
Exactly. Like if you want to, you know, if you want to achieve something, it's not going to just happen. You've got to, like you said, dedicate, commitment, focus, and also give yourself little small goals leading into that big goal. I know for me personally, if I had trained just from 2004 to 2008, just focusing on the Olympics, I would have burnt out. Yeah. I needed those sort of small steps for each year. And then even within that, I'd know my goal times that I should be achieving within a training session, and they were getting faster, obviously, leading into the Olympics. You've always got to sort of change those goals to make them a little bit harder to achieve, so you're pushing yourself that little bit more.
Yeah.
Some people are like, oh, wow, you went to the Olympics. Did you win a medal? And I'm like, no, but I worked damn hard.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of what I achieved. So, yeah, I think just, yeah, for those young people out there wanting to achieve something, you might have a goal in mind. It's always good, though, to readjust those goals and look at them and to see if they're, you know, it is what you actually want to do and what you want to achieve.
And I think, you know, in terms of what you said about, you know, not winning a medal, yes, it would have been nice, and that's what you work for.
Yeah.
But, you know, that doesn't define you as a person.
Yes.
I think that's a very important lesson from that.
Definitely. And I think it's so easy, for a lot of athletes, to so strongly identify with being an athlete. For me, being a swimmer, it was a large part of my life. And, yeah, I still even say, yeah, I used to be a swimmer. But, yeah, like you said, it doesn't define you. No, I didn't win a medal. I didn't make a semifinal. But I finished 42nd out of 90 competitors in the 50 freestyle. I can say I was top 50. I was top half in the world for my event at the time. And even if I was slower than that, I know for me personally, I trained as hard as I could and I was happy with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's so much good in that because, you know, not everyone's going to be world number one.
Yes.
That's the very rare, that's 0.0001% of human beings.
Well, so I think, between first and 42nd for me, it was like less than 2 seconds in the 50 freestyle.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But I think what's important is the lessons you got out of that.
Yeah.
Was there one or two lessons that stood out for you that you've thought about up until this point that has helped you take that out of swimming and into your everyday life?
I think you mentioned before sort of that patience. I struggle with that every day. I'm generally an impatient person. So I think that was really good for me to learn those lessons literally every day in swimming, you know, being patient and just putting in that work and being resilient, I think, was another really strong lesson that I learned throughout my swimming career. Obviously not making the Olympics in 2004 and being able to sort of bounce back from that and then redirect my energy into, making it for 2008 Olympics.
I want to talk a little bit about the habits that you would have had. You know, we've all got good and bad habits around training and, you know, just generally.
Yeah.
I think they're such an important part of what where someone takes themselves and down the path of, you know, success or failure.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to the good ones after.
Okay. We'll start with the bad.
Yeah. Were there any bad training habits or any habits outside of training that affected your training?
Probably, I was trying to think because I don't feel like I had bad training habits, but I think, like you just said, sort of outside of training, I love food, in particular chocolate.
Yep.
It was like my go-to. So if anything, that was probably something that sort of hindered my swimming because I just loved food, all food, chocolate, lollies, ice cream. That probably affected me, but I think definitely for the Olympics, though, sort of that year I knew that if I wanted to achieve what I wanted to achieve, I really needed to sacrifice, and I did for that year.
Yeah.
I don't think I could have done it longer than a year in terms of being that strict and really sort of questioning and, you know, do I need that or do I just want that? Is that going to fuel me or is that going to make me feel bloated and make me slower in the water?
Yeah.
I don't think I could have done it longer for a year in terms of the food.
Yeah, food is just fuel. And, you know, it's still tough for me to say no to junk food, you know.
Yeah.
I've been able to eat clean and but sometimes potato chips is just so good.
Good. Yeah. Chips and gravy. Yeah. I love chips and gravy.
Yeah, how do you resist them so often? But, you know, there's food is fuel, and that's certainly something that will help elevate your performance and keep you there for longer too.
Mm. And I think I was fortunate with swimming because it's so much energy you're burning. I was able to eat a lot of food in that sense. So.
And that's the other thing, right? I know guys who can eat anything and still be able to play at the top of their game. So I think finding out your – learning about your own body and how you operate under it is important too.
Yeah.
The good habits.
Good habits. I was consistent. I'd always be going to training. Yeah, consistency was definitely a good habit. And when I was there, I always gave 100%. There was times where I was literally throwing up after an effort at the pool because I literally had that much lactic acid in my body that I was throwing up, and then I would get back up on the blocks and race again.
Yeah. That little moment there where you're feeling like you've got to give up or you've got to stop because your body's hurting so much.
Yeah.
What are you telling yourself to keep pushing yourself for the next, 10, 20 meters before you hit the end?
Yeah, so I think because it was so painful. I'm like really thinking about it. I'm like, oh, it just makes me feel sick now thinking about it. But I think in that moment when you're training, you're like in a race, it's not going to feel like this. It's going to be easier. That's why you put in the work now. You hurt now because you're challenging your body now so that when it comes to a race, your body's just going to know how to perform.
Yeah. That's a good way to think about it because, there's so many days you go to training, your body's hurting, and then you miss times, and everyone else is way ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
You're just thinking, am I really cut out for this?
Yeah.
And those
oh, yeah. I'm like, why did I choose swimming? Of all sports, it's so boring.
But, it's a real thing. Yeah. Athletes go through this and they think that when a lot of other talented, more skillful rugby league players in particular, I've seen have just given up simply because of these little moments.
Yeah.
And I just think, what a waste.
Yeah.
Of these guys just, not pushing through this because that's the hardest part.
Yeah. I guess another good habit then is backing yourself and knowing that you can do it.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's the number one mindset that, these guys who have been able to perform at a high level for a very long time.
Exactly. They've got that.
They're always backing themselves. Mm. Hey guys, just going to take a quick break from this episode. I want to mention Cuts Clothing. They've been a sponsor of mine for a couple of months now, and now they're sponsoring the episode. So I just want to talk a little bit about them. So these guys make elite apparel for the modern professional. As you can see, I've got the polo on, the cap. I enjoy wearing them every day and I like to put myself in that modern professional category. And so every Cut shirt is designed to provide a perfectly tailored fit. Plus, Cuts has all the essentials for looking sharp, like tees, polos, caps, hoodies, and more, so you can look and feel good no matter what the occasion is. Now, I wouldn't say I know too much about fashion, but one thing I do know is that Cuts have mastered the art and science of perfecting the men's tees. I wear these shirts for meetings, podcasting, catching up with friends at a cafe or a restaurant, or just when I'm at home spending time with my family. And because you guys are mindset listeners, Cuts have allowed me to give you guys 15% off your total order. Head to cutsclothing.com, that's CUTSclothing.com, and enter DavidMead15 at checkout. All right, let's get back into the episode. I know we've spoken a lot about physical training, how to get past that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you've got in place that to keep your emotions in check? I know the best thing about being an athlete is you learn how to deal with the ups and downs of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you learned there that applies to your everyday life?
Yeah, definitely there were heaps of emotions up and down. I think for me it was easier to manage if I just let myself feel whatever emotions they were. And I've sort of taken that with me after sport as well. But yeah, just knowing, if I'm feeling angry or upset, just sort of knowing where to direct that energy. And I think, swimming can be quite therapeutic in terms of it's quite repetitive. So it was good to sort of just go through those thoughts in your head. And I did a lot of journaling, so I would generally write down a lot of my sessions down and the times that I did and sort of how I felt about that particular session. So whether or not I was happy with it, or, you know, a bit frustrated, or I was feeling a bit off or stressed about a uni assignment or something like that. Those were good ways for me to sort of check how I was feeling. And then it was sort of easier to see also how that was then reflecting on my performance.
Yeah. So you found getting it out of your mind and on paper.
Definitely, yes.
Is a tool that certainly helps you.
Yes.
Because I find that as well, if I'm feeling whatever the emotion is, you know, angry, frustrated, or even happy.
Yeah.
Particularly with the negative emotions, when you write it down, you know, scrunch the paper up and throw it out, you feel better nearly immediately.
Yes.
But then kind of the opposite takes place when it's something you're grateful for. Mm. When I write down things that I'm grateful for, it enhances that experience.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how that works, but it's certainly a tool that helps me as well.
Yeah, sort of just putting it out into the universe there, sort of releasing it.
Yeah.
As even in terms of the positive emotions, you're putting it out there, and that's the stuff that you're going to bring back to you.
Yeah. Knowing that you're going to transition from full-time swimming to the working world. Mm. I mean, I don't understand the swimming world.
Yeah.
So you might have to enlighten me on this space a bit more, but I'd imagine that that took up a fair bit of your time. There's a lot of structure there. How did you find that structured life to transitioning into workspace?
Well, I was very fortunate throughout my swimming career. My parents, and particularly my dad, supported me financially, definitely up until the Olympics. And they made it quite clear, when I finished swimming, so does the money. So, I mean, obviously I was working casually.
Do you say, damn it.
Yeah, I was like, oh, do I just keep swimming?
Mom, Dad, I'm going to go swimming. Yeah. For you. It's going to take me about 4 hours, then.
I thought about it, but then I was like, nah, I can't do that. But, so definitely leading into the Olympics, I was supported financially by my parents. And I had that flexibility in terms of my time, not having to worry about paying the bills or, you know, any of that sort of stuff. But I actually stopped swimming in 2011. I was aiming to go to the London Olympics, but in that moment I actually really hated swimming. So I was like, nah, I'm done. And I stepped out of the water for, 2-3 years, but I always knew I was going to come back for Pacific Games in PNG in 2015. So when I started training again in 2014, by that stage I actually had a full-time job, and I was living with my partner, I couldn't train the same way that I trained before because I had other commitments. I obviously didn't want to lose my job. Yeah. I enjoyed my job. My body was also different as well, that it couldn't handle the same amount of sessions in the water that I was doing back in 2008. So my training sort of changed. I think I was doing only like 6 to 8 sessions in the water, but I had more of a focus on my strength and conditioning in the gym to be more powerful. And that's where I sort of focused my training with the full-time work. And then even after swimming and being in full-time work again was different, because I then felt like I had a lot of time, which was sort of rare for me, obviously, while I was swimming, because like you said, it was very structured. I knew sort of what mornings I had training, what mornings I had gym, I'd work, 8 till 3 or 8 till 4 and then go swim again or do, some form of training. So when I had full-time work and no swimming, there was just so much freedom.
Yeah.
it was a lot. I think it was a bit overwhelming, to be honest, in terms of how much time I had on my hands.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just sort of able to spend more time with my friends, because they I just wasn't very social. when I was swimming.
That's an interesting one, the feeling so overwhelmed with all that free time.
Yeah.
Because I had to go see a therapist actually around this, because when I finished, the next month was very busy for me. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of meetings in place.
Yep.
I wouldn't say busy, but I knew what I was doing from 8 till 5 p.m.
Yeah.
And obviously a little bit of training around that as well. Mm-hmm. And then when I finished that, about a next 3-4 week period, I felt overwhelmed with all this free time. And my wife, Tinu, will tell you that I was just, slouching on the couch, laying there, doing nothing, putting myself in a – bad space and, you know, drinking a lot of, you know, coffees and not eating the healthiest. And that's a bad cycle. So that's about a 3-4 week period.
Yep.
And so what my therapist said was, you've gone from this structure of, well, first of all, you've gone in from a structure, primary school up until you're, you know, 33, knew what you were doing, but now you've trying to juggle that yourself.
Yep.
That in itself is a challenge. Another thing on top of that, you've gone from a place of these 1% of guys who are hungry to win and to, you know, go out and, you know, bash each other and, you know, compete to none of that at all. And he said, with all due respect, you're at home with your wife and kids now.
Yeah.
You can't do any of this stuff.
Yeah.
so he said, you need to find something that replaces that. And I know guys who have struggled.
Mm-hmm.
I never understood other athletes who transitioned and were able to struggle.
Yeah.
And were struggling. But for me, I was like, now I understand what it is. Having that structure in place.
Yes.
Other guys around you to compete.
Yeah.
And I found that, you know, going to a touch game on a Wednesday night, being around friends more has helped.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly a real thing when an athlete transitioned from a structured environment to a lot of flexibility.
100%. And it's so interesting you say that, because so I'm studying counselling at uni right now, and I just finished an assignment, and the assignment was counselling recommendations for a particular client base, and I chose elite athletes that are transitioning out of sport. So what are the counselling recommendations? And, you know, I spoke about how the athlete leaves, so whether that's by choice or if they're it's involuntary, meaning, you know, they're injured or they're cut from a team or other sort of circumstances. And yeah, the things that came up in my research when I was doing that essay, like you said, it's that loss of structure, or it's a grief process in terms of you losing your sport, your teammates, the structure, and then, you know, you're losing that sort of identity. And then, like, with that loss of grief and losing your teammates, you know, that loss of self as well, self-esteem, you know, what am I doing now? And, you know, you've got to find that other – you've got to find something else in your life that has meaning and purpose to you.
Yeah.
I think is, really important for that transition space.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, you know, I never appreciated it until I've been in that position to actually see it.
Yeah.
And – and I know there's a lot of other guys who are out there. So, you know, obviously reach out to others as well and how they've been able to do it is very important as well. For me, how it's kind of got me out of that little hole is, you know, I joined the gym and I was sitting there on the chair and, you know, I just get this message on my phone. I wasn't signed up to a gym or anything.
Yeah.
I just had this on my phone and just went, ting, ting. You've got a gym appointment in 1 hour. I looked over at Tennille, she's standing in the kitchen. She's like, get your ass in the gym. You got gym in 1 hour. So, you know, she helped me get out of that. And I'm in a much better headspace now. And I'm glad I am, because, you know, obviously got a podcast. I've got to be an example
mindset.
For it.
Yeah.
So, it's a real thing.
Yeah.
And you got to get on top of it as soon as you can, because you don't want to go down that.
Definitely.
That downward spiral.
And I think, going from something that's so structured and so elite in the terms of the high performance, I think, just finding any sort of exercise outside of that's important. I also joined a touch. I'd never played touch before. I did mixed touch, so I did it with my partner because otherwise I probably wouldn't have gone.
How's your passing?
Passing not so good. I can catch, but, I'm not Well, I mean, I can do short passes, but the long passes, there's no chance there.
That's right. I can't do passing. I've been doing it my whole life.
Well, that makes me feel better. Yeah. Thank you.
I can catch all right, but the passing is not.
Yeah.
Or no kicking.
Yeah.
But, touch is fun.
Yeah.
And good social way to exercise as well.
Definitely. And I think coming from swimming, I wanted that sort of team environment more in that social sport. And I also did netball as well. So, netball, touch. I also joined a gym as well.
And it's you must feel so much better after doing all this stuff.
Yeah, a lot better, because I think my body's just so used to being active and moving that if I'm sort of slouched on the couch all day or not doing much, it just sort of brings me down.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to get the body moving, endorphins and all that good stuff. So. So
nice. I think there's some good stuff there. I've got some rapid fire questions.
Yep.
Answer them as long as you want, as short as you want.
Sure.
These are a bit more fun. Do you have a favorite quote, saying, or a way to live life?
I think it changes all the time. But I think even just after this conversation, the quote that sort of comes to my head is "the universe has your back," is coming to my mind. Because I know, like, I believe in backing yourself and, yeah, trusting your instinct. But I think as well, yeah, the universe has your back too. So if you put that sort of good stuff out there, it's going to come back.
Yeah, I like that stuff. I've been big on visualizing and something I'm not too conscious of now is like manifesting.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Listen to a few podcasts on that and
yeah.
Trying to understand that is pretty hard.
Yeah.
And I know visualizing, it's something you've done.
Through sport.
Through sport.
Yeah.
You know, trying to see how you can help yourself perform. Mm-hmm. It certainly works. I guarantee it works.
Yeah.
When you do it well. And manifesting, that's an interesting space.
Yeah, I feel like I've sort of just stumbled across that too. Like I've heard the word before. But at the moment, my manifestation is I am open and receptive to receiving all the wealth that life has to offer. And the way I interpret it is not just through money, but the wealth of life. So whether that's through friendships, relationships, just pretty much all the good stuff that you want in your life, and saying that you're open and receptive to it. Because you can say, yes, you want it, but if you're not actually open to receiving it, how is it going to come to you? So that's the sort of thing that I'm manifesting. And it's, yeah, brought around some pretty awesome stuff since I started it. So I can't complain.
Tell you what, I've got some examples too, but, you know, probably too much to share right now.
Yeah.
But it's certainly something that works. And the close group of friends I have, not all my friends are like that, but the ones who are,
yeah,
they've got some good stuff happening in their life. So
yeah,
I'd certainly highly advise dig deeper into this space and learn more about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, thanks.
If you were an animal, what would you be and why? I've had some...
Tiger.
Tiger? Oh, yeah. You know it, yeah.
Yeah. I've always been a fan of cats in general. You know, I love dogs too, but... cats are my jam.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, like, when I told my partner that I love cats, he's like, yeah, yeah. But the first time we went to Tasmania together, I literally had a cat follow me. Like, they just follow me. I don't know what it is, but I just love them. And tigers in particular, they're so strong, so powerful, independent, but still loving in terms of like mother cubs and that sort of stuff. And I've just always been drawn to them. I love them.
I love the way that you put that with the tiger.
Yeah.
In terms of cats in general, I'm petrified of cats. And I think it's from watching movies. And
yes, they're always the bad guy.
Yeah, and they like jump on people's face. So whenever we're walking past, I feel like they're just going to jump and latch onto my face.
No. So. And you know what? The cats can smell that fear too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I know. I've learned a lot of ways to control my fear, but around cats, it's not that good. Do you have a favourite sports person?
Favourite sports person. So Susie O'Neill was like my absolute favourite growing up. Being a swimmer, I just thought she was so amazing. And I still love her and idolise her now. But I think as well... watching sort of more sports people, Serena Williams, Michael Jordan. But I think, yeah, Susie O'Neill, she's just, I love her.
If there were three people you'd invite to dinner, who would they be and why?
Oh. Oprah, because she's Oprah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, definitely Oprah. Michael Jackson, because I love his music and I love to dance. So at this dinner party, there's going to be dancing.
Do the moonwalk?
Yeah, I try. With socks on. actually, and my bubble, my mum's mum, because she passed away when I was little and I don't remember a lot about her. So I'd be interested to have a dinner with her as well, just to sort of find out more about my mum as well. And, back home in PNG, I think would be amazing.
Yeah. You know, if you don't mind, after the rapid fire questions are done, if we can share your story about how your mum helped you get here. I saw it on that Pacific Sport Show.
Yeah.
You know, I was supposed to ask you at the start.
Yeah.
But if we can ask you that at the end.
Yeah, sure.
I'd love for you to share that if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course.
Have you got a favourite book?
I don't think a favourite book. I love Harry Potter. I've read them over like 7-8 times each, I'd say. And I had all of the physical books, but between my sister and I just don't know where they are.
Yeah.
But I've downloaded them all onto my Kindle. But yeah, I don't have a favourite book. I like reading and I wish I had more time to read.
It's certainly one of my favourite things to do as well. Have you got a favourite meal?
Ooh, that's hard. I love mud crabs. So, and my mum, oh man, the way she cooks them, amazing. But then my dad can cook a mean steak as well. And it's funny because he's a pescatarian, so he doesn't even have red meat anymore, but he'll still cook a steak for me.
Oh, jeez. That's all right.
Yeah.
The final one, if there was a billboard that you saw on your way to work every morning, what would you want it to say? Or if there was a picture of something on a billboard, what would you like to see on it every morning before work?
Smile.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Haven't heard that one before, but I love that one.
Yeah.
Sets up a good day, I reckon.
Yeah.
Having a big smile on your face.
Definitely. And generally when you're smiling at someone else, they're going to smile too.
Yeah. So. Love that. Going back to your story in PNG and what your mum did for you to come to Australia, can you share a bit of that with us?
As in like how I, like my first experience of being in the water and being thrown off the canoe in Kikimunga River.
The whole lot. No, I love that story on that Pacific Sports Show and would love to hear it here again.
Yeah, so I just remember I was on the canoe with my grandma, my mum's mum, and she just thought it was a good idea to just throw me off the canoe and see if I could swim with, you know, some crocodiles down a bit further down the river. I obviously have no memory of this, but I obviously made it back to the canoe and made it back to land. But yeah, that was sort of my first sort of taste, I guess, of being in the water. And then, I guess it's sort of, stuck with me because, when I started swimming competitively, I was like, well, if I could do it then, I can definitely do it now.
And what your mum did to get you to support you?
Oh, yeah, man, she was everything. She was the chauffeur, she would cook me meals, and she was one of my biggest cheerleaders. And I think it's amazing to think that she was getting up in the morning, driving me to training with my baby sister in the car as well. So like that, you know, those are sacrifices my mum and my sister made as well. I think we used to live like 20, 25 minutes away from the pool and, you know, to get there for a 5 o'clock start, that's, waking up my baby sister, getting in the car, she'd drive me to training and then I pick me up with, four pieces of toast ready for me to eat in the car on the way to the bus stop to then, go to high school. Like she, she's done so much for me. And as I said, biggest cheerleader, sometimes we'll go somewhere together and she'd be like, oh, this is my daughter. She's an Olympian. I'm like, oh my God, mum. Like sometimes it's a bit much, but I know.
She's going to take the credit, right?
She definitely takes the credit and she still does. But I love her. And she's sacrificed so much for me. And she was always there for me, supporting me. Yeah. And I never felt any pressure that I had to continue swimming. That was from both my parents. They sort of made it quite clear, like, if you want to do it, we're here to support you. If not, that's fine too.
Yeah, that's a great example. I think sometimes of parents can put a lot of heat on their kids to an expectation to perform at a high level, but in my opinion, my kid's going to choose what he wants to do.
Yes,
I'll be there to guide him along the way, but you don't have to do what I did.
Yes.
And you can do whatever you do. I'll be there to support you.
Yep.
And if you want to change directions, that's fine. As long as you're giving your best.
Exactly.
In whatever you love doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important lesson.
Definitely. And my partner and I have had this discussion because he used to play rugby union for PNG And obviously, so I used to swim for PNG. We've got two boys, and he jokes all the time that if they're swimming, I have to take them training. And I'm like, oh, no, I don't want to be getting up that early to take my boys swimming. And then he's like, well, if they play rugby, he'll take them. But we're both, very open to letting them do any sport and every sport.
Yeah, I think that's important because I go back to PNG a lot, and I know parents there, they want the best for their kids. Mm-hmm. But you sometimes don't realize. I know it happens in Australia too.
Yeah,
you know, you want the best for your kids, but you know, take it easy on them. You know, you don't need your dreams to be lived out through your kids. So
yes,
take a seat back, relax, and you know, let your kid play. Especially those sideline.
Oh yes, I do not want. Parents. Yeah, no, I don't want to be one of those.
Yeah,
I saw a lot of them growing up, and I don't want to be that parent.
Yeah,
I want to be there, supportive of them, but. They are their own person, first and foremost.
For sure. And before we finish up here, is there anything that you're doing business-wise or moving forward, anything that you'd like to share
on
the podcast before we finish up?
So this is my last semester of uni, and then I will be a registered counsellor. So I'm opening my own private practice next year, and my focus will be on athletes. So particularly more amateur athletes. I think there's a lot more support in place for elite athletes at the moment, but I think it's more important for those younger athletes or even amateur athletes that aren't quite sure if they want to transition to that next stage and, you know, having to juggle other commitments like work, study, family. You know, I want to be that person there to be able to help those athletes in navigating sort of what direction they want to go. And then... outside of that, I also like to do some crafting stuff. I bought a Cricut machine, which is so much fun. So I can like put stuff on like onesies, and I love making cards and handmade cards for birthdays and Christmas as well.
Oh, nice.
But that's not really, that's just more of a hobby thing.
Yeah, that's all right. We still recommend it. I'm sure there's others who have an interest in that as well.
Yeah, definitely.
In terms of the business that you said, any name now, or are you still holding off?
I'm going to use my own name, so Annalisa Moppio Jane.
Okay.
Yes, and then I'm hoping once I submit my last assignment, then I want to sort of knuckle down, get my website up and running. I'm going to be offering online Zoom counselling until I find like a space that I want to sort of really settle into for that counselling space.
Awesome. Annalisa, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. Thank you so much for sharing your story and, you know, the knowledge and experience from your swimming and as well as life in general. I've certainly learned a few things here, and I'll be listening to this podcast over again.
Thank you.
For sure.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.